You're listening to Richie Allen on the UK's biggest independent news radio show. Have your say by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. President Trump says there is light at the end of the tunnel amid very preliminary indications that the state of New York may be moving past its peak number of coronavirus infections. But there are still enormous concerns about the loss of life the virus will inflict in the next few days on the United States, where the death toll currently stands at just under 10,000. In neighboring New Jersey, the first field hospital has opened to relieve medical facilities besieged with coronavirus cases. Phil Murphy is the state's governor.
We're also working to expand capacity by utilizing hotels and dormitories, particularly those located in hotspot areas or in close proximity to hospitals which are nearing capacity.
At the White House, President Trump has once again been touting the use of anti-malaria drug hydroxychloroquine in the battle against coronavirus.
What do you have to lose? They say take it. I'm not looking at it one way or the other. But we want to get out of this. If it does work, it would be a shame if we didn't do it early.
The president, of course, has no medical experience and blocked the director of the National Institutes of Health from answering reporters' questions about the drug last night. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson remains in hospital fighting persistent coronavirus symptoms. He was transferred there over the weekend and said on Twitter today that he's in good spirits. His government, meanwhile, is rejecting millions of antibody tests sent to the UK from China after discovering they did not accurately detect immunity from coronavirus. From FSN's London Bureau, Stuart Smith reports.
UK government scientists will develop their own tests after commercial antibody kits ordered from China were found to be inadequate for mass testing across Britain. At one point, the rollout of the kits was expected within days, but the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, admits none of the kits ordered so far are good enough. The antibody tests are expected to be essential for ending the lockdown, as those who have had the virus are highly likely to be immune and highly unlikely to be infectious, meaning they could return to work. Stuart Smith, London.
The latest numbers from Spain and Italy show the number of deaths slowing in both countries, evidence their governments say that lockdowns are working. But in Japan, the government is expected to declare a state of emergency in Tokyo and six other regions as case numbers there begin to soar. Two other stories today. A Russia-based ultranationalist group, the Russia Imperial Movement, is to become the first white supremacist organization officially branded a terrorist group by the US State Department. And the actress Honor Blackman has died. She will forever be remembered as Pussy Galore in the James Bond film Goldfinger, and before that, Kathy Gale in The Avengers. She was 94. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Welcome to Monday's programme. It's a glorious afternoon in Salford and around Greater Manchester generally. Hope you've had a really good weekend and you're rested and raring to go. I've got a top show for you this Monday. I'll tell you about my guest in a moment or two. You can't tweet the programme, sadly, because the programme is suspended, I don't know, temporarily, maybe permanently from Twitter. So I don't know how we're going to get your comments. We'll work something out during the week as we go along. Anywho. Yes? Yeah, okay. We'll crack on with it then. Share around your own social media pages, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, about our guest today and our guests every day. Every little helps, you know, I suppose. Right. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live and not so interactive today, but there you go. Nice to be with you. Nice. Let's do it then. Let's crack right on.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, my guest today is an author, a broadcaster, a politician, and the man who invented the email. Yes, he's got multiple degrees and PhDs, including a PhD in biological engineering from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He's very, very well known indeed. It's Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Dr. Shiva Ayadure. He joins the programme in around about 25 minutes' time to tell me and you why he disagrees with his own government's response, not only his own government, but governments around the world and the way they have responded to coronavirus. Lots to get into with the Dr. Shiva Ayadure. He joins the programme in about 25 minutes. There you are. And that's Monday's programme. We're going to round the news up. The news, eh? Eh? The news. Nothing but coronavirus. It's a thing of beauty, really. The programming that's going on. The mind control. I don't use words and phrases like mind control lightly. I don't throw them around willy-nilly. But it's what's going on. It's quite startling, really. You know, part of what I do is to spend quite a bit of time watching and listening to the TV and radio. And like I said last week, I'm only repeating myself, mouth ajar, mouth gaping open, not believing what I'm seeing. It's vaudeville. It really is. If you don't know what I mean by that, well, look it up. I mean, it's crazy stuff, right? Right. Right, I've asked you, are you well? We've established that you are because you're here. Did you flout the lockdown? Did you yesterday? Did you defy the lockdown around the world? Great weather in most places in the UK yesterday. We went out with our dogs. The park in morning and the football in afternoon. And played with our dogs. Met some people. Chatted while the dogs played. It's what we would do anyway. The early walk was busy. Met lots of people. Kind of quite around in the afternoon. The Prime Minister Boris Johnson is in good spirits apparently in hospital. He's got a temperature apparently. You might know this, Boris Johnson has been in isolation for more than a week and his temperature temporarily spiked, I believe, and rather than take any precaution, they whisked him into hospital, into an hospedal, as we would say in God's country. So he's in there, annoying the bejesus, presumably, out of the staff. Interesting story about the police doing the rounds of the UK news websites this afternoon. A man was fined after driving at 110 miles per hour on the motorway. When he was pulled over, he said to the police he'd been on his way back from London to buy bread. He was on his way to Nottingham. He was on his way to Nottingham. Police pulled him over. Where were you? I was in London. Why? Well, I was buying bread there. Travelling at 110 miles an hour with two children in the car. Why were you going to London for bread? He said the bread was a pound cheaper in London. Oh, God. Leicestershire police said he was handed two fixed penalty notices and reported to court for the speeding. Court will decide what punishment to give him. Driving at 110 miles an hour on a motorway with children in the car. Ban him for 3 years. Rip his licence up. No driving for you for 3 years, pal. Closing parks and open spaces in the UK should be a last resort. Says who? Says the community secretary. He's a guy called Robert Jenrick. And he told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, local councils should be very judicious in taking the step to close a park. He went on to implore people to bloody well stay inside. Stay inside, can't you? Why were they talking about this today? Well, Lambeth Council closed Brockwell Park yesterday afternoon because there were so many people there, you see. Now, they reopened it this morning, but they closed it yesterday afternoon because the weather was gorgeous and people went out and about. Jenrick said, I have a lot of sympathy, he said, with those concerned that public confidence could be lost by people in power closing parks. So here's the Mayor of London, Labour's Sadiq Khan. He's the Mayor, don't you know? And he's on Sky News today and here he is speaking about the decision or not to close the parks.
We've got more than 9 million people living in our city and the vast, vast majority are following the rules. There is a small minority that aren't following the rules, that are in close proximity, that are doing things they shouldn't really do during a global pandemic. Now, the problem and the challenge for that council is they saw on Saturday very large numbers not following the rules, and they were worried about that accelerating the spread of the virus. So in consultation with the local police, they made a decision, a tough decision, to close the park on Sunday. It's reopened today. The key thing is for all of us to please follow the rules. You're right, there are many Londoners who haven't got the luxury of a garden or a bigger home. Often they have young children and they need to get out and use these green public spaces. And that's why it's really important we continue to abide by the rules. What nobody wants is a park like Brockwell Park having to be closed on a Sunday. And that's why it's really important that the small minority that aren't following the rules, please follow the rules. It's so important.
Follow the rules. Why can't you just follow the rules, you bastards? I didn't mention, he's Labour's Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London. I didn't mention yesterday, maybe I did mention it, Tony Blair and Peter Mandelson are back running Labour now. Although they never left, did they really? Keir Starmer, Sir Keir Starmer, if you please, is the new leader of the Labour Party. I think he got 52% of the votes, did he? Or 56? Might have been 56. And he appointed a shadow cabinet of Blairites. Blairites. Ed Miliband joined today. Do you remember Ed Miliband? The man who screwed up eating an egg? It didn't cost him the election a few years back, but well. He's the shadow business secretary now. What happened to, Jeremy Corbyn? What happened to all of that, eh? I warned you, but you wouldn't listen. Blairites back in charge of Labour now. Let's leave that. I mentioned Vaudeville a minute ago. Now, my great friend, the great thespian herself, Jean Anne, oft mentioned, and deservedly so mentioned. Great thespian, great achievements on stage and screen. She will know what Vaudeville, the reference to Vaudeville is. Vaudeville is even. You might think I don't know. I do. Again, I mentioned watching and listening. I'm in the park. I'm on park. You don't go into the park if you're from Salford. You go onto the park. I don't know how it works. So I was on park earlier today and listened to the radio as I do. And I was stunned. Because BBC Radio 4's Today programme is a bit of a national institution. It's a news programme. You get nothing on it but a dry read-through of the news and some interviews that in the past were good. Hostile interviews with presenters who know how to screw a politician to the wall. Nail him to the wall. It's a very important programme, very dry. Well, I was listening to the show today and I couldn't believe my ears because the Radio 4 Today show is now running, because of the times we are in, it's running a new comfort and hope segment. Amy.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yeah. It's got a new comfort and hope segment where famous people, BBC people, including BBC journalists, will read poems and tell stories. I am not lying. This morning, the Europe editor for the BBC, a woman called Katja Adler, and her daughter Sophia read The Stolen Orange by Brian Patton. Now, that's a poem, by the way. And it reminds Katja of her late dad and of the simple things we can find around us to give us comfort in these dark times. Vaudeville has come to BBC Radio 4's Today programme.
The Stolen Orange by Brian Patton. I'm reading this with my daughter Sophia because she's about the same age that I was when I first discovered this poem, fell in love with it and got courage from it. When I left, I stole an orange. I kept it in my pocket. It felt like a warm planet. Everywhere I went smelt of oranges. Whenever I got into an awkward situation, I'd take out the orange and smell it.
And immediately, on even dead branches, I saw the lovely and fierce orange blossom that smelled so much of joy. When I went out, I stole an orange.
Stole an orange.
It was a safeguard against imagining. There was nothing bright or special in the world.
Hey, Tom, did you hear this? Did you hear this, Tom? BBC reporters and Europe editors are now reading out poems on the Today programme for our comfort and our hope. Did you hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Neither can I, Tom. Neither can I. It's 14 minutes past five. It is a glorious afternoon here in Salford. It really is. MPs are calling for an investigation into false narratives. This is the UK's Digital Culture, Media and Sport Committee. Now, the chair of that is Julian Knight, MP. And he's fed up about all of the false narratives around coronavirus. And they have to be dealt with. People like, well, people who present independent media radio programmes, whom give a platform sometimes to those who have a different opinion or who have a different take on what's happening. We might be disseminating false narratives and we need to be dealt with. This is true. Julian Knight said this today. We know where this is going. This isn't new. We've seen this coming. No need for me to dwell on this. So there isn't. Disinformation, he said. Disinformation. Now, it's funny that the BBC reported that. The BBC today were reporting on the need to deal with the disinformation. Every BBC news programme this afternoon said that there is so much misleading stuff online about coronavirus. Well, these people need to be dealt with. They need to be dealt with. I thought it was ironic that today the BBC were going so far down the road of attacking the independent media. Today particularly, that you had Katya Adler reading a poem on the Today Show. But it got even worse. Because this morning, on BBC Radio 5 Live, the presenters got caught with their trousers down. They got caught with their pants down. You see, there's a GP called Ellie Cannon, a doctor. Oh, she's an awful pain in the arse now, believe me. She's on the BBC and Sky all the time. Makes you wonder why she's on the BBC and Sky all the time. One, because there are other doctors. And two, because she isn't very good on air. Not great, not got much presence about her, I wouldn't have said. Then again, what do I know, right? So BBC Radio 5 Live this morning had her on to take calls from people at home, medical calls. So you might ring up live, BBC Radio 5 Live this morning, to speak to Dr. Ellie, to say, Ellie, I have a little tickle in my tonsils, or I have a little ticker on my todger, or whatever, right? And she would give you an answer. Dave called up. Dave asked his question about his health. You will hear the tail end of the answer given to Dave, and then Dave throws in a quick question before they let him go. And it's quite wonderful, really. If I can play it now, because for some bloody reason, things have gone a bit mad here at Richie Allen Show Towers. Yes, here we go. Dave calls in, has a health problem. She gives him an answer. You will hear the tail end of the answer, and then he throws in an extra question, and it's just glorious.
The fact that you feel well to go back tells us that you're not still sneezing, you're not still coughing, your amount of virus in your body is going to be negligible, if any at all, and therefore your chance of passing it on to anybody are going to be even smaller than that. So I would feel reassured that from what you've said, you are fine to go back to work.
She'd put the most hyperactive child in the world to sleep, wouldn't she? That's what I meant by having very little presence. So she's answered Dave's question. You'll be able to go back to work, Dave. And then Dave throws this in.
Great stuff. Well, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Good luck, Dave.
Rachel.
Yeah? Chris,
very quickly, can you just at some point raise the subject to the volunteer army? Because this was obviously trumpeted by the government 2 or 3 weeks ago, but we've got 750,000. And if you look on social media, they've all sent the forms off, and I don't think anyone has actually heard anything since.
Isn't that amazing? Will you look into the volunteer army, Rachel and Chris on BBC Radio 5 Live? Because you talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and all the pathos that went with it. You told us how great a country we were, that the NHS needed 500,000 volunteers. They needed them. And you'd never shut up about it, BBC 5 Live Breakfast. And you told us we should all get involved. And yet, nothing is happening. It's just not happening. There are social media pages all over the place where people are saying, nobody's gotten back to me. Is this NHS army? Is it a load of bollocks or what? And the presenters, you can hear there's a little bit of an edge in their voice because they've been caught with their trousers down.
It seems to have sort of withered on the vine.
Withered on the vine. And listen to the response.
The Royal Voluntary Service, I think, is coordinating all...
Very edgy, she sounds.
...those applications and probably furiously going through them and trying to allocate them to appropriate roles. But it's worth us checking out and catching up on that one, Dave. Thank you for that. It's a good reminder.
Lots of work out there.
I don't think it's gone away at all. I think it's just a massive logistical operation.
Far more than they were expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get
ahead. Yeah, let's move on very quickly, Dave. We're the National Breakfast Show. News Breakfast Show on BBC Radio 5 Live. We went on and on about this thing. You all signed up to it and then we just dropped it because it's bullshit, is what it is. And you've caught us with our trousers down. There is no volunteer army. It's a nonsense. 19 and a half, 20 minutes it is past the hour. Let's move on before I lose my mind. Love that, yeah. Love when they get caught. Tobias Elwood is a Tory MP. He chairs the Defence Select Committee. That's a prestigious gig. And he was on Sky News Breakfast with Kay Burley, the ginger ninja. And Kay asks him, is there an exit strategy from lockdown? Right? Kay asks him, was an exit strategy outlined in government on the day they announced the lockdown? That's a good question from Kay Burley. A, is there an exit strategy? And B, was there one from the get-go? Needless to say, the chair of the Defence Select Committee doesn't properly answer it.
Well, as the doctor, Dr. Lloyd, just said, we're still learning an awful lot about the coronavirus and we have to adapt quickly. But you're absolutely right. It's almost like waiting for a train on the station. If you're not aware of why there is delay, you get even more frustrated. So the government must take the nation with it, must understand the phases that we're going through, the responsibilities that all of us must participate in that, but also that there is a plan, that there is a vision of where we're going to go, something for us to look forward to. We must all buy into that. It could very well be that the hardship that we endure post the coronavirus in this initial stage is going to be tougher than the virus itself. You need to educate the nation to anticipate and expect that, and indeed prepare and work with it and support it.
Things are going to be dreadful in the wake of the virus, is what Tobias Elwood said at the end, which is why I grabbed the audio, even though he didn't answer Burley's question. It's going to be bloody horrendous. Then Kay brings up China, strangely enough. Kay wanted to talk about the consequences for China when this is all over.
Now's not the time.
Now's not the time, but I'm going to say it anyway.
But I'm guessing in the fullness of time, eyes will cast to the east.
Eyes will cast to the east. You won't be able to help it, dear listener. You won't know why. All of a sudden, you'll find yourself looking to the east to blame the Chinese.
Wonder about China's involvement in what's happened to paralyse the world.
Those monkey-eating.
I think that's absolutely right. There are major questions, frustrations that the Chinese sat on this for 4 weeks. I'm afraid they have form here. When the SARS virus came out, they didn't inform the World Health Organization for 88 days. Now imagine if we had 4 extra weeks to put things into place. Of course, there'll be questions about our own conduct, the decisions that we're making here. But ultimately, the entire globe is affected by this. There will be a global recession. There needs to be some form of domestic Marshall Plan, in my view. There also needs to be some form of global recovery roadmap as well. And don't forget that whilst all this is happening, we have state and non-state adversaries that wish us harm. We should anticipate and expect cyber attacks, disinformation and other challenges to our way of life and the standards and values that we uphold. It's going to be a tough few years ahead. But going back,
tough few years ahead, eh?
Back to your point, we need
Debenhams has gone to the wall here in the UK. Companies are dropping like flies all over the place. The construction sector is absolutely banjaxed. The recession that's coming in the next few months, in the next few years, will make the wake of the manufactured 2008 crash look like Disneyland. I've been saying this now since I came back. It's going to be horrifying for people. And those of you who've been with me for years, and have heard some of the learned men and women, some still here, some gone, Jim Mars, rest in peace, this is the way it's going to be, because it's the way it was meant to be. Yeah.
We need the nation behind the government.
We need the nation behind the government. Take all the austerity we have lined up for you.
Government needs to rally for that support.
I wanted to ask you, that's where I was leading to, about nations that would wish us harm.
Nations that would wish us harm. Now she's going to talk. You see how none of this is spontaneous. Kay Burley doesn't have a spontaneous bone in her body. She's now going to raise the spectre that the UK is a bit vulnerable now to attacks from her enemies because the UK is dealing with the coronavirus. So she's basically given an opening to Tobias Elwood, the chair of the Defence Select Committee, to say that we need to spend more money on the military. This isn't spontaneous. You can hear by the way Burley even phrases her question that it is a question she has been fed. I'm tired of explaining this stuff to you. Listen to what she says.
Can we still protect ourselves effectively in these challenging times?
When wow.
Literally the country's on its knees.
Country's on its knees. How's the military?
Its knees.
But the answer is we need more money.
Well, I've been pushing for an increase in the defence budget for some time now. huge praise to our armed forces, which are doing such a fantastic...
Yeah, don't spend money on schools, on hospitals, on playing fields. Don't build houses for people, affordable houses. Don't do that. Don't build love. Don't build happiness. Don't build beauty and a great society. No, no, just build more guns and bombs and weapons of mass destruction, evil things. That's what we need to do, Kay.
Fantastic job. With the NHS and so forth, but ultimately they have a day job. They need to watch our backs, and I hope that the review that will eventually take place will recognise that the challenges that we face are growing and they're getting more complex, more complicated. They're moving into the sphere of space as well as the cyber as well. We do need to invest more in our armed forces.
Yes, let's invest more in our armed forces, says Tobias Elwood, the chair of the Defence Select Committee. These people are sick. Aren't they? But anyway, look, it's 26 minutes past the hour. We are excited. I know you're excited. I'm excited. You must be excited. The Dr. Shiva Ayadure will join the programme live in about 5 minutes' time. I was really happy. He got back to me very quick today. He's doing a lot of media. He's a dissenting voice, you see. He's a very qualified man. Very qualified man. And he's been critical now for some time of his own government's response to coronavirus. He's also been hugely critical, as I said earlier, of the global response. We're going to talk about Anthony Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who basically tells Trump what to think and what to say about the response to coronavirus. We're also going to talk about vaccines, obviously. We're going to talk about the impact globally on the economy. We'll talk about all of that, and I'm looking forward to it. So before we do that, then, let's take a tune. I've got Simon and Garfunkel lined up. Sure, why not? It's a sunny Monday afternoon. The Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester, back in three.
Son, Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. We'd like to know a little bit about you for our fathers. We'd like to help you learn to help yourself. Look around you, all you see are sympathetic eyes. Stroll around the grounds until you feel at home. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Hiding in a hiding place where no one ever goes. Put it in your pantry with your cupcakes. It's a little secret, just the Robinson's affair. Most of all, you've got to hide it from the kids. Coo-coo-ca-choo, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey.
Simon and Garfunkel on the Richie Allen Radio Show, 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Are you well this Monday? Are you in good form, you are? Ah, yeah. Very warm, it's very warm in studio. In studio, it's very warm. Great big windows facing me. I'm looking at these great big windows. I'm trying to think, they must be... The sun rises in the east and it sets in the west, right? Is that right? I think that's right. That would mean... My windows are west facing, southwest facing, that's it, southwest, there you are. So it's kind of warm. Just waiting for Dr. Shiva Ayadure. He'll join me live in a minute or two. He will. And I know there's great interest in this. I know there's huge interest in this. I've never been a big fan of Twitter. And the show uses it for two reasons and two reasons only. One, you can send me your comments during the live radio show. That's nice. It's good. And secondly, predominantly, well, after that then, it's used to sometimes send a tweet to a potential guest. Somebody whom you can't reach through a website or through an agent or whatever. So it can be handy. So I know there would have been a huge reaction to this on Twitter. So it's a bit of a pain in the backside that we can't read your tweets. But look, there you go. There you go. Now, I know Dr. Shiva Ayadure, pronouncing that right, I know he's winding up an interview, so we're going to wait for him. I might take another tune in the meantime. And I've got some other really good guests coming up this week as well. I will mention them as we go along today. And after we finish chatting with Dr. Shiva, there are a few things I want to get through as well, some other news items that I'd like to talk with you about. But I am really keen to find out about... What you've been doing over the weekend and all of that. You know, have you been going out and about? Have you seen much of a police presence around? Have you been accosted by or questioned by a police officer? These are things I want to know. All right? All right. We'll take a tune while we're waiting for Dr. Shiva. This is The Small Faces. I know, and I'm living in the past. I know.
Over bridge of sights, to rest my eyes in shades of green, under dreaming spires, to Ichiku Park, that's where I've been.
What did you do there?
I got high.
What did you feel there?
When I cried.
Why the tears there?
Tell you why.
It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful.
Yeah.
Richie Kubark, Small Faces, the Richie Allen Radio Show. No sign yet of Dr. Shiva Ayadure. We'll give him a few minutes. The conversation was arranged earlier on with him and his personal press secretary. Spoke with both of them and they seem to be looking forward to it. So scheduled for around about now for 5:30 our time. We'll give him a bit of time. Could have run over doing something else. These are the things that happen. In the meantime, just a couple of quick headlines we can have a look at in the meantime while we're waiting. Mention Debenhams. This is the thing, you see. And this is the beginning of it. All right. Debenhams, I suppose if you're not in the UK or Ireland, you probably won't know much about Debenhams. But it is a very, very famous and, I suppose, a long-standing, very successful department store chain here in the UK. And it announced earlier today that it will file for administration after the lockdown forced it to shut its shops across the UK. It said, Debenhams, that the decision to file for administration is a light-touch administration, basically to protect it from legal action from its creditors while its department stores are closed. So while the department stores are closed, they're not making any money, obviously. But their creditors won't go away. So by trading while in administration, they can hopefully get some money together and pay their creditors and look after their staff. Now, there are a number of stories. And Sky's business editor, Ian King, has been across this pretty much all day on Sky News. The impact that they're already seeing, not just in the UK, but around Europe, as the effect of the lockdown basically takes hold. And you could never accuse this programme, certainly not me anyway. I might have had some guests on over the years that maybe pushed fear maybe a little bit, but I've never done it. You have to say what it is you see and what you believe and the impact it's going to have on people in the very, very near future is going to be cataclysmic. It's a terrible thing to say. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Have you any good news for people? Well, no. People whom, you know, mid to late 20s, even mid to late 30s, who are working, and they have a mortgage, and they have a child or two or three, and don't have very much in the bank by way of a safety net. You know, don't have a few thousand pounds in the bank to tide them over for a few months. They're in serious trouble as this bites, and we're going to see this. And this is one of the things I wanted to get into with Dr. Shiva Ayadure. So a number of stories on BBC News today, the Financial Times, about the effect this is having on people. BBC reporting that under 25s and women in the immediate term will be the worst hit financially. Young workers, the lowest paid, and women will be the most effective. This is the Institute for Fiscal Studies. They've been following this since the lockdown was imposed. They got straight into action and began to model for the eventuality, began to model for what this would look like for people in the very near future. And it's fairly shocking. And I suppose, again, if you're familiar with this programme and familiar with the men and women who've been coming on it for many years, I won't name them, you'll know that to a man and woman, this was something that they predicted. I don't know what to tell you. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm not sure we're going to have Shiva Ayadure. I don't know what's happening. We're all set up. We're all lined up. He should have been there at 12:30. That's Eastern time in the US. That's 5:30 here, but he hasn't showed up. I'm hoping that he's been delayed. We've got plenty of time. I'm happy to play a few tunes and have a chat with you and give them some time to come on, because these are the things you do. You roll with the punches. Improvise, adapt and overcome, I say. So we'll give him some time because it's important that his voice is heard. One of the things I said to him when I contacted him very early this morning was, I said, the UK media and the commentariat here in the UK is speaking with one voice. That the lockdown is necessary. It is for our own good. And even though it is going to have a negative effect on the economy in the long term, it's still the right thing to do. We have to do it anyway. It's better that we save people's lives than worry about the economic impact of it. That is the unified voice of the UK media and the commentariat. And there are men and women in academia. There are men and women in business who are saying something a bit different, but they are not getting to the flagship programmes on the BBC, on Sky and on Channel 4 News. They're not. Which is the reason I reached out to him. So there you are. Right, 19 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to take another tune. This is Diana Ross and the Supremes. If I come back from that and he's not with us, we'll go a different way. Because that's all you can do, really. Where's the Supremes? There you are. All right. Back in a couple of minutes with more.
I need love, love, to ease my mind. I need to find someone to call mine.
It's 18 minutes to the top of the hour, the Richie Allen Radio Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show, live from Salford in the great city of Manchester. Just got finished talking about the economic impact in the UK, what that's going to mean for people here in the UK, the global impact of it. Debenhams basically announcing today that 20,000 jobs are in jeopardy here. The famous department store, the motor industry, the construction business in the UK. And this is mirrored not just here, but right across the world. And as I mentioned to my guest when I emailed him this morning, there isn't any other opinion being expressed about this. According to the commentariat here in the UK, according to the media in the UK, this is good. Yes, it's going to have a terrible effect on the economy, but it's the right thing to do. Because it will save lives. Now, my guest has recently said of Anthony Fauci, who's running the public health response in the United States to the coronavirus, he is basically advising Donald Trump. My guest said the current trajectory of Anthony Fauci's public health policy will result in the short and long-term destruction of our citizens' immune health as well as our nation's economic health, perhaps a conscious and intended goal. Let's welcome our guest. He is an author, a broadcaster, politician. He invented the email. He's got multiple degrees and PhDs, including a PhD in biological engineering from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I'm delighted to welcome to the program Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Dr. Shiva, welcome to our program. How are you?
I'm doing great, Richie. Very nice to be here, and my best to everyone in England.
Thanks for coming on, because I didn't give you very much notice when I sent the email this morning, but my audience has been bombarding me for about 2 to 3 days, saying you've got to speak to a Dr. Shiva, because as I mentioned to you, Shiva, I've been lamenting the fact that the UK media is ignoring voices like yours. Obviously, learned men, learned women, who've got the academic credentials, who see the coronavirus response differently, but they are deliberately being marginalised and hidden, almost deliberately, to prevent people from hearing their point of view. Has that been your experience in the United States?
Yeah, look, if you actually look at this, it's quite, it actually makes a lot of sense. The mainstream media, if you really consider them, I'm talking about the big mainstream media, is fully in bed with big pharma, which is fully in bed with big healthcare and big medicine. And the reason I use the word big is because what's happened to the world over the last 70 years or 80 years, you know, whatever time frame post-World War II, has been that we moved to centralized planning and centralized economies, beginning with the United Nations, et cetera, is that even within our countries, be it in England or be it in the United States, the goal was big is better, right? So we centralized science, we centralized healthcare, we centralized pretty much every function, and we took power away from people at the edges. When the truth is, when you really look at history, be it science and innovation, the greatest times when we had science and innovation were when it was done, you know, by hobbyists, you know, at the end points of innovation where people are doing it, you know, finding out their own ways to do it. When we centralize science and innovation, what we've had is we've created corruption. And that corruption in science in this case is that everything is a nail and always use a hammer. And what do I mean by that? Everything is an infectious disease, right? Everything's an infectious disease. So if you look at the history of infectious diseases, they thought scurvy was an infectious disease for 100 years. Then they said, oh, it's vitamin C deficiency. Pellagra, you know, which was the thing where people were get like eczema type stuff. Oh, yeah. That's an infectious disease. They quarantine people. Oh, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with niacin, okay? And then we got into things like beriberi, right? Which was another thing where people would get paralysis, et cetera. That too was an infectious disease. Then people realized it was thiamine deficiency and so on. The big pharmaceutical companies, the big media companies who basically get funded by the big pharmaceutical companies and the big scientific establishments all work together against you and me. And that's what the opportunity for people to understand is right here now, we're seeing the biggest fear-mongering hoax being pulled on the people of the world, for that matter. It's essentially, you have a virus, which, you know, we don't even know the numbers, okay? The books are being cooked so much, but we do know the so-called people who are dying and being affected are 98% of them are elderly people, and they have pre-existing conditions. Diabetes, smokers, I mean, you go down the list, you can just, it's all on the web.
How do you know the books are being cooked, though? We've got a problem here, you and me, because I kind of agree with you, which doesn't make for a bloody good interview, because I agree with you. But I'm going to stop you just once or twice, because there are people listening to this program, and they don't agree with you, even if I do. They'll say, where's your evidence that governments are cooking the books on the numbers of fatalities?
Well, I'll give you the evidence right here, okay? So if you go into your doctor's office and you have some ailment, right? You're coughing or you have a chest pain, you go in. When you go in, be it in the NHS there or in the United States system, they have to diagnose you, okay? They have codes, actual codes for your diagnosis. Well, the World Health Organization created two codes for COVID, okay, coronavirus. One was that you had the test and it clearly shows you had it, right? The actual definitive test. The second was something very nebulous. Well, it sort of looks like COVID, well, we don't know, you know, I mean, it's just like very nebulous. They created two codes. You see what I'm saying? They didn't create one code. The second code was to give massive amounts of flexibility. So if you go to a place like Italy, a lot of people are being put under code two, okay? And in fact, in a place like Italy, you know, nearly 38, 40% of the people are over 65. A guy would walk in with chest pains. Oh, he's got COVID, yeah. Okay? So and by the way, who created those codes? The World Health Organization. In the United States, after you get a diagnosis code, then you get what's called a procedural code, like what should we do to this person? Like we should intubate him or we should put him in the ICU. That's a different code. That's owned by the American Medical Association. So even in the US, a number of good friends of mine who are pediatricians or doctors in major hospitals, they're saying they got an email from the CDC telling their hospital administrators, encouraging them to confuse both codes. So after someone dies, they may have gotten 2 days before a test done. Okay, the test sometimes takes 14 days. You know, they're dead, the funeral's been conducted, they haven't gotten the results back, they put them as COVID-19. Let me give you another example. I know this personally, a friend of mine, her husband just got put in the hospital. Well, he's been a smoker for 30 years. Anytime he gets pneumonia, he's already been gone to the hospital many times last flu season. Well, he had COVID, he's in the hospital, they intubate him. Look, if something unfortunate happens and he dies, what are they going to say the reason was? COVID,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They're never going to talk about the fact he was a smoker for 30 years.
We saw that recently here with a very famous comedian called Eddie Large. Eddie died, Scottish comedian, very famous in the 80s. he had very serious health problems, Shiva, really bad ones, and
I said
heart failure, everything. He was in hospital with heart failure, multiple heart attacks, and God love him, he passed away. And Sky News and the BBC reported him as having died of coronavirus.
Exactly. You see,
yeah,
the whole
thing
is one of the biggest scams being run. I'm not saying there isn't a virus or not. I'm not saying people should not wash their hands. But what I am saying is that, you know, 56 million, I think 62 million people in the United States, nearly 17% of the U.S. population got the flu. 66,000 people died. Okay.
Yeah.
640,000 people get heart disease every year. 440,000 people in the United States die of medical errors. I don't see them calling a shutdown. Those are serious public health issues. So instead, we have decided to make this the public health issue of our time. And I'm telling you, this has occurred before in history. The medical scientific establishment, particularly Big Pharma, is losing money. They're burning and crashing because pharmaceutical drugs are not making them money anymore. So their only option is to scare the bejesus out of all of us and to say vaccines are the only way. What this means is England and the United States, well, next year around this time, I wouldn't foresee, this is not a, you know, something that would be a rare occurrence, them saying, hey, Richie, you need to get your, where's your vaccine card?
Yeah.
We can't let you drive. You can't go in the metro. Where's your vaccine card? You can't go to the gym. And this will basically make the 7.2 billion people on this planet a captive audience, basically a free market, and not a captive market, to all be top-down vaccinated, top-down state-controlled medicine. That's what China is. And you know, out of this entire economic crash, India's economy was growing at 7-8%, now they're at 2. US was growing at 2, now it's at -3. China is gonna basically be the winner out of this. This fear-mongering is what it's all about. And the scientific establishment, two or three people are controlling the lives of billions. And Anthony Fauci is Emperor Fauci. He literally, and I mean that without any jest, because for 40 years, this ain't his first rodeo. In the 80s and 90s, he created the HIV creates AIDS. He conflated HIV to AIDS. AIDS is your immune system gets suppressed. That can occur through many ways. HIV, 70% of Zambia has HIV. Not everyone's dying. There's all these bugs all around all the time. They've created a fear-mongering of every bug.
He might say, hang on a second, Shiva, and we've got as much time as you have, by the way. I'm so glad you're here. Hang on a second. He might say, if he was here, Fauci, he might say, well, they've got HIV in Zambia. They've got it in other parts of Africa. They're not dying because of antiretroviral drugs. That's why, he would say.
That's not true. They're not taking any drugs. If they were, they'd probably be dead. Okay? So the point is, people need to wake up. You're talking about an individual who has spent his entire life in that centralized establishment. If you look at the history of the National Institute of Health, they went from 100 million in funding all the way up to 12 billion. 50% of all the universities in the United States in the biological sciences, which is all, by the way, it's all, I mean, any university which gets funding for biological sciences, or if you're a professor, must bow down to Fauci, must bow down to the NIH. And remember, most of the professors, as I don't know if it's in England, but in the United States, are all egomaniacs. They have to bust their butt to even get their tenured position. So they are all basically in golden handcuffs. They will not say anything, even though they know the fundamentals of the immune system don't match up. The foundation of your immune system, it's actually quite strong. I mean, we wouldn't have come out of microbes and, you know, viruses to be where we are. The reality is, when you have a compromised, weakened, dysfunctional immune system, which is what happens as you get older, which is what happens if you eat sugar all day, and you can go down the list, those people, their bodies overreact to a pathogen. It's not the pathogen, it's the overreaction, which goes and destroys your own tissues. It's your body attacking you. Now, that occurs when you have a screwed up, dysfunctional immune system. And that occurs from dirty air, dirty water, dirty food. That occurs from eating garbage all day long. That could occur a little bit from genetic proclivities, but that's rare. But big agriculture, big pharma has brought that up to us. And here is their biggest opportunity to continue their economic model. And they'll even crash the world economies if they have to.
Let me just recap, because this is incredible stuff. Dr. Shiva Ayadure is live on the line. I know you know who he is, the inventor of the email, author, broadcaster, politician, multiple degrees, but very interestingly, from our point of view, the PhD in biological engineering. Hugely important. This is a type of voice, you might not agree with him. You may agree with him, you might not. His voice is being marginalised here in the UK. People like Shiva exist in this country. Men and women that have gone to the Ivy League institutions that he's gone to, and they agree with him, but they are being marginalised. Let me just do a quick recap. You believe that there is a virus, it is nasty, and it is affecting people with compromised immune systems, like older people. Is that a dog in the background?
Hold on one second.
There's a dog in the background screaming. Sounds like a husky. It's an Alaskan husky, I reckon. That's my money's on an Alaskan husky.
Alan, though. Just take them out with their normal stuff, okay? Yep. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That sounded like an Alaskan husky to me.
No, we have a bunch of dogs. Go ahead.
A bunch of dogs. No, I'm just going to just do a very quick summing up. So you believe there is a virus. It is maybe pretty virile. It is hurting some older people. It is hurting some people with pre-existing conditions. But what you've been saying is...
No. So let me tell you what's actually going on, okay?
Right.
There are 380 trillion viruses in your body right now, okay?
Yeah, I've read that.
Viruses will always be here. Microbes will always be here, okay? This is, as long as there's human beings and we exist and the earth exists, these things will exist. And they're in our bodies, number one. Is that clear?
Yep.
We already have a lot of viruses around us, right?
Yep.
But we don't see, you know, people dying all the time. The reality is this, that it is not the virus that harms or kills you. Most medical doctors don't even learn this. They think, I'm telling you, most medical doctors think the virus is some Godzilla and it comes into your body and starts eating you up and a vaccine blocks it. That's not what happens. What happens is we are surrounded by viruses. We're surrounded by bacteria. We live in a jungle, okay?
Yeah.
It's like a fish in an aquarium is surrounded by water. Well, the water is viruses and bacteria.
Yeah, it's but you did say, sorry to interrupt you, Shiva, but you did say that you think, because I agree with you, that there is a virus of sorts. It's going around and some people are getting it.
Definitely.
No doubt, but you said, which is really important, that the response to it has been beyond disproportionate because it's exaggerated. You explained why you believe they're cooking the books, and you believe they're doing this ultimately because they want to present a vaccine for it. You want everyone to take it. But I also want to touch on...
It's part of this. It's part of the... If you look globally what's going on, more and more people are starting to understand how supplements work, people are doing yoga. People are starting to figure out how to take care of their health on their own time, on their own schedule. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Most people do not want to take pharmaceutical drugs, okay? In the United States, the average 82-year-old is on 12 different pharmaceutical drugs. It is a moneymaker for them. Well, those pharmaceutical drugs are causing side effects. You and I can sue them if they fail in the U.S. So this is creating a liability issue for them. Vaccines have no equivalent safety standards, and you can't sue the vaccine manufacturers if the drug hurts your kid.
That's right.
So it's Big Pharma's opportunity to impose its will. And you have to understand, Big Pharma has an amazing history of doing the most amazing ad campaigns. They're masters of advertising. They always create the big problem, and then they're going to give the big solution, right? This is But if you look at the reality is that everyone needs to understand your immune system is quite strong, and it is up to you to decide what inputs you give it to strengthen the immune system. If you support your immune system will take care of you. Well, one of the best ways is vitamin D. You know, in the winter times, particularly where you are and where we are here, you know, the vitamin D levels go down. And why is vitamin D important? Because vitamin D is an antimicrobial, and not one person, be it in England or here, discusses this until I really started pumping this out there. Vitamin, just scientifically, vitamin D from the sun, or if you take vitamin D3 cocalciferol, actually enables your body to create another chemical called cathelicidins. These cathelicidins are like bullets. They literally pierce and disrupt the membrane of viruses, bacteria, fungi, and parasites. Okay? So vitamin D, which is sun. This is why many cultures, you know, paid homage to the sun. So it starts with vitamin D. Next is vitamin A, which protects the walls of your body. This is very similar to going back to things like other things where the infectious disease was always put in front of people's mind, always to scare them. I'm not saying there's not viruses or this bacteria, but I'm saying is we're like a fish in a pool, we're surrounded by viruses and bacteria, surrounded by them.
Somebody with your intelligence, do you not lie awake at night? Because what you're suggesting is it's patently, demonstrably evil, isn't it? This is evil. You're talking about
it is evil.
Yeah,
it
a gang. It's evil. A cartel. You're saying it's a cartel that wants that knows. It's well aware that what it does makes us sick and keeps us sick. They want to crash the economy. They're prepared to do that, you reckon. Exaggerated virus, turn people's lives upside down, put billions of people out of work, and are doing that for their own end, to make money, to save their own business. I mean, a guy of your intelligence, and I'm not saying that to butter you up, but you must say to yourself, is this really happening? You know, because to a lot of people, you know, because you must get this, Shiva, you must get this. A lot of people will say, ah, come on, man. You know, that's...
Well, you know, it's actually, you know, if you see the videos that I'm doing, coming at it from a pure science side, and you look at the response, that's not what's happening. If I were, and I know there's a lot of, if I were just some yoga guy, you know, and by the way, I like yoga, and if I were just some guy who just did acupuncture, right, with needles, which, by the way, I support acupuncture, there's some value, or if I were just a masseuse, or if I just wore my little turban, right, and I was talking to these people who try to dismiss me, right? The problem here is that I have 4 degrees from MIT. You know, I'm a Fulbright scholar. I study this. I'm considered one of the experts on the immune system.
You are.
And this is a problem. And people in their own instinct, particularly working people who work with our hands, or plumbers, electricians, housewives, you know, we already know this intuitively, something doesn't make sense, okay? Because people who actually do work for a living, not the lawyers and the lobbyists and, you know, people who study weird topics that have nothing to do with reality, they always live in la-la land. But people who work, you know, in day-to-day and actually have to serve a customer, right? We know reality, and the reality is that just like the immune system overreacts and hurts itself, when politicians or policymakers overreact, they're going to hurt the economy. The economic health is as important as the immune health. And you have to, the response has to match the enemy, right? Here, what's going on is that you have a virus, and this virus isn't anywhere near H1N1 was, anywhere. Okay, we didn't shut down everything. We didn't collapse the entire world economy. Why are we doing that here? What is the motivation? It doesn't add up. And what we're taught to believe Fauci. You see, when things become so fear-mongered, people sort of let go of their own common sense. And what I'm trying to do is just to be a mere catalyst and say, let's go back to basic principles. Your immune system is the operating system of you. It was designed to protect you over billions of years, if you believe in evolution or even natural design, if you believe in God, okay? It was designed to protect you. Now, the question is, how do you support your immune system? That's the question here. So if you're a sailor and you go back and forth on a ship like in the 1800s, 1700s, you don't eat vitamin C, what happens? Your teeth will fall out, right? So they used to say that was an infection. They looked for 100 years. Oh, my God, there must be an infection. Where's the microbe? It's the soldiers hanging out too close together. No, it was because they didn't have vitamin C. So they gave them limes. That's why sailors are called limeys, okay? So the issue has always been the pharmaceutical industry, the medical establishment, or the is always trained to look for bugs, 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 viruses, viruses, viruses. You know why? Because that generates that entire, that's their scientific business model. It's not trained to find, oh, vitamin D, you know what, that's only pennies. Simple solutions are not allowed. It has to be some ridiculous solution that can only come from them.
Yeah, back in the day, general practitioners, when I say back in the day, I'm 45 now, when I was much, much younger, they would talk about you getting fresh air, getting more sun, getting some natural light, even if it isn't sunlight. And they would often talk about vitamins. My family doctor would talk about vitamins and say, look, you need to take, you know, you need to drink orange juice, Richie. You need to get vitamin D. They used to do that. They certainly do not anymore. I'll give you that. Let me ask you this, because I know our time is limited.
Yeah, because
I know
what's happened is the medical establishment has become more and more centralized. You see, if you really look at what's going on, Richie, it's all about centralization of power. Remove at all levels, like I started this conversation with, at the healthcare level, oh, you can't have an individual relationship with your GP or your holistic practitioner. Both of you will figure out what's right for you. No, it's got to be top down. That's what we're talking about, assuming everyone We're all little robots, and we will take orders top down. So what we're standing before us is really the issue of freedom at a very fundamental level. Will the state even control what goes into your body? Will the state control your bloodstream? This is the ultimate of the issue of freedom. And by the way, this issue has always gone on throughout history. It just comes in various forms. Are we going to be free people, or are we going to be slaves? That's what this is about.
Can we?
This is not about a virus.
Can we? Can I ask you about the economic shock, and then can I go back to the mandated vaccines? I am being told that there is an enormous reaction to this on Twitter. Like you, maybe not as many as you, but I've got tens of thousands of Twitter followers for the show, but I've been temporarily suspended from Twitter because I foolishly recommended to people that they go out and enjoy the sunshine and spend some time with their friends. So my Twitter account was suspended for something as innocuous as that. But that's not important. Before we come back to mandated vaccines, let me just remind our listeners who we've got on the line. You are, of course, with the Richie Allen Radio Show, live on Fab Radio International here in the great city of Manchester. The TuneIn radio app as well. We're on Trigger Warning. Syndicated, it is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. That's the truth. And we have the preeminent, terrific to have him on the programme, Dr. Shiva Ayadure. He's an author, broadcaster, politician, inventor of the email, multiple degrees. By the way, there isn't a trace of arrogance about you. I've been watching your videos. I think you're a gentleman, and you should talk up those PhDs and degrees. People should know, because they're getting it only one way on their media. They're being told, oh, this expert, that expert. You're an expert, and you should be heard as well. He's on the programme today. I'll put on Facebook links to his website, Dr. Shiva Ayadure. Before we come back to mandated vaccines, how devastating do you think, and I know you don't do fear-mongering, I don't, how devastating will the economic shock be?
Well, it all depends on, look, the wealthy, the super wealthy, the 0.1% in the United States, you know, they're printing money with the Federal Reserve. That money will go to the big banks, and the big banks will make sure their people are protected, okay? Because they'll put it into the stock market, and a significant amount of that will go back to China, and China will build its dollar reserves. The real issue is what it does to working people, okay? So we need to understand some people will do well, or the very, very small, because they always manage to figure out, but it's about what it'll do to working people. Working people, you know, these kinds of printing of money essentially diminishes the value of money. And that's what it'll do to people. I think in the United States just last month, 10 million people applied for unemployment. That's huge. So what it's doing is it's a small business folks. The big guys always seem to take care of themselves, if you notice, whatever the disaster is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking about the small guys. We have a restaurant down here, a woman and her husband run a restaurant. Well, they haven't opened their restaurant in, 30, 40 days? They can only do takeout. So what you're seeing is it's a small folks who always hurt. It's not the big guys, because they always take care of themselves. So it's going to be devastating to those people, because those people rely on customers, right? They rely on business orders day to day. So it's really unfortunate, but you have to understand, I don't know what the situation in England is, but in the United States, large members of the Chinese Communist Party, you know, the wealthy people in China, and large funds there have funded a lot of the mortgages, you know, the lenders here in the United States, like Wells Fargo in the US. So, and they undercut everyone else when they give loans for homes. So a lot of these loans are owned by very, very wealthy Chinese funds. So think about it. People go out of business. What do they have to do? They're going to sell their homes, right? Well, what's the next thing? They're going to be renting homes. Well, who do you think they're renting homes from? From other people who foreclosed, who owe money to Wells Fargo. So you basically have an indentured society that's going to be created. So I keep saying, without any hyperbole, the United States, I don't know about England, is going to essentially headed to be a colony of China.
Massive interest in this. I'm getting questions now on Facebook. I'm getting questions on email. I'm not going to get through them all. I know you're not anti-vax. I know you're not. I'm not.
No. My position is this.
Yeah.
I'm a scientist. So look, I'm not pro or anti-vax. The issue is it's about your immune system. Okay. Let's always go back to fundamental principles. It's like, what is the goal here? I want immune health, right? It's not about taking drugs or not. It's like, what do you need to do to support your immune system? So if you were brought up in a bubble, Your parents never let you outside. You were brought up in a completely sterilized home where you know everything was so clean that you never saw any bugs. You never saw dirt, right? That's one extreme. Now let's take the other guy who grows up in slums of Bombay, India, right? He's around all sorts of microbes all the time. Those two extremes are both, in my view, not supportive, because a guy who grows up in the extreme of too clean, if he tries to go out, he's probably going to, his body's immune system is going to overreact. In that case, you may need to use artificial, quote unquote, immunization methods, right? And titrate him to some vaccines. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you have to slowly introduce him to microbes. If you want to call it a vaccine, great. The other guy's been stressed out all the time. His body's always fighting something, right? You may need to pull him out of that, clean, you know, go for sanitation, right? Because he's probably got all sorts of antibodies, yeah, right? Yeah, he's probably a super person, but his body is probably compromised in a different way. So the issue is there's something in between there. It's not like a perfect one size fits all. What the state wants to do is tell, oh, everyone should get these 30 vaccines. Everyone should get these kind of dosages. My view is you can't centralize medicine. The body is too complicated. Your body and what you need, if you're an Olympic athlete, you need a very different caloric intake and vitamins and nutrients and minerals than a guy who's a couch potato, right?
Yeah.
So if you recognize this basic principle, you realize that medicine and health has to be decentralized back to the individual and back to their healthcare provider. Now, the issue is someone wants to be automatons and they want to be told what to do. They want to get everything the same. Let them do that, but don't take away my right, right? If you want to eat donuts, and if you want to eat, genetically engineered foods, and you love pesticides in your food, great, go for it. I'm not here to stop you. You know, more food for me if you die early.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, fair enough. Let me ask you this, Shiva. You spoke earlier on about laws that prevent, or I should say, that protect the pharmaceutical industry from litigation, so they can't be sued over the vaccine. That was very important. So let me ask you this. This is really important. Because they're protected in that way against litigation, have they taken in recent years a cavalier attitude to safety around vaccines? And I'll ask you that question for the reason that there are women emailing me now from the Republic of Ireland, my country, as you guessed by your gratuitous use of the term bejesus, by the way, Shiva, which I did notice earlier on. And they're saying, Richie, we are convinced that thousands of girls in this country were harmed by the drug Gardasil, which is supposed to prevent against the human papillomavirus. We're not anti-vax either. We agree with Dr. Shiva. But we believe that this vaccine has harmed people and there is a big cover-up, and they believe it's because they are protected against litigation. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. If you look at the ultimate issue is if people want to do science and they want to play fair, and I have to take this call right after this, but I think the bottom line is this. What you will see is that the entire vaccine manufacturing industry does not have to follow the same regulations as drug pharmaceutical industry, you know, yeah, synthetic compounds. They're not even regulatory wise under that same stressors, you know, that they have to follow. In addition, in the United States in 1986, there was a law passed which basically said that you cannot sue vaccine manufacturers because so many injuries were taking place. So they created, it's quite extraordinary, a vaccine court. They took people out. Basically, they separated, they shredded the Constitution in some sense. They took carved out a piece of the judicial branch and put it under Health and Human Service. So if you had a child who died or vaccines, there was only a $250,000 liability. So think about you, and you can't sue them. So if you're a vaccine manufacturer, you say, wow, should I make a drug? Oops, I can get sued, and I can, you know, people can come after me, and I can lose a lot of money. Oh, vaccines? No lawsuit. You know, low risk, high profit, high profit meaning you can sell it to a lot of people, right? A drug, you can only sell it to a finite set of people, the people of heart disease for Lipitor, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But imagine all 7.2 billion people all having to take 20, 30 vaccines. That's $1,000 per person. Let's say that's about $7 trillion a year. So you're looking at, it's a business that's being executed. And the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, and the Chan Zuckerberg Foundation, they're all pro, they're the ones who are pro-vaxxers, and everything is an infectious disease.
Final question before you take your call, by the way, because I know you've got another call, and thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. It was short notice. So, final question. You believe they will attempt to mandate this, not only that, but in the future, their goal is to make vaccines mandatory for everybody. You believe that?
Well, what do you think? Take this condition. Look at what the setup has been, right? If you consider this, to next year, around September, October, November, they say, oh, my God, this other flu is coming.
Yeah.
What will people do? They're going to say, oh, my God, I don't want to be stuck at home. I don't want the economy. Give me whatever vaccine you got. I'll just take it. Right?
Yeah, I suppose. Listen, thanks for coming on.
That's where
it's going.
That's where people need to. That's where this is going. And Fauci, you know, that's why the Fire Fauci little petition we put up, I think nearly 20,000 people have signed it.
Huge.
By the way, he had some of his supporters somewhere put up something on People magazine that he should be the sexiest man alive. And I think after 10 days, it's only got about 8,000 signatures.
Only about 8,000, is that right? Let me have one sneaky final question. Sneaky one. Are you dismayed at how people all over the world, ordinary men and women, ordinary men like me, I'm an ordinary kid from Waterford in Ireland, I'm not the brightest guy that ever lived, but at least I see through this. Are you dismayed at how willingly people have being allowed themselves to be locked down and allowed their cities to be turned into a police state? Go ahead.
Well, look, what's happened over the last 20, 30 years is that those in power have actively told people, and what I call the not-so-obvious establishment, told people to give all their power away to legislators, right?
Yeah.
And lawyers and lobbyists, that they will fight for them, not that we build bottoms-up ground movements. You see?
Yeah.
This has been actively done, and people have thought, you know, you have the Labour Party, and you have whatever your other party there is.
The Conservative Party, the Liberal Democrats, right?
You always have two parties who always play people off. They always work for the establishment. In the United States, you have the Democrats and the Republicans. So change is always supposed to come from within the legislature. But the reality is change has always come from people's movements, bottoms up, if you look at the history of movements. So they have actively dissuaded people from building their own movements. And, you know, we can have another discussion. We can talk about what effect drugs have had on this, you know? Drugs have, you know, particularly, you know, I'm into decriminalizing this thing called cannabis, but the cannabis of today is 25 times stronger than the cannabis of 40 years ago. And inarguably, it is a medicine, and you can go report after report after report that for young people, it is not all positive, okay? So we've created an environment where we've lulled people away from actually standing up, from actually understanding what this means to their lives. And so that's why I think this year, the next few months are going to be critical to the trajectory of what occurs over the next 80 years of how people, what kind of society we create. Are we going to be a society like China with 200 million cameras, one camera for every four people? What are we going to be? Automatons, or are we going to be free human beings?
London is there already. Do me a favor. You don't have to, of course, but in the near future, when you have a bit more time, if you had 45 minutes to an hour, we'd love to have you back, because it's been terrific having you on. And as somebody who's worked in media for years, I know how busy you are today of all days. So it's very kind of you to take this interview at very short notice. I don't often say that to people, but I really mean that, Sheeb. It was great having you on today.
And great, thank you. Be well.
Yeah, and you too, sir. Thanks very much. That was Dr. Shiva Ayadure. He was live on the line. A man, as I said, multiple degrees and PhDs from Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He's an author. He's a broadcaster, a researcher extraordinaire. Huge following. His videos are being watched by hundreds of thousands of people on YouTube all the time. And he's a dissenting voice, so he is. He's a dissenting voice. He's challenging the lockdown narrative, and he's asking questions about why it's really happening. What time do we have now, eh? It's exactly 20 minutes past the hour. I'll take a very, very quick break. When I come back, I think we might wrap up when I come back. We'll see how we go. It's been one of those days, to be honest. We might wrap up.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Yeah, it's incredibly warm too. It's a very warm afternoon here in Salford. I wish I could see the tweets that were coming, and I've been told that there's been a lot of tweets there about that conversation and with him, with Shiva Ayadure, who I can't tweet it out, but I'll get Rog to put links on Facebook to his website and to the other videos. Like I said, over the weekend, a number of people got in touch with me and suggested that I invite him on because of his background. This is the thing, you see. Talked about this on Sunday View, and it is a point that I do labour from time to time. Yes, I do. I'm aware of it. You think you're bored? I bored the arse off of myself. Where did I put that arse? Of course it's repetitive. You know, we talked about Andrew Marr yesterday, speaking to one government advisor who said, lockdown very good, please let's have more lockdown, while ignoring another one who said, well, the lockdown is not very good at all, and the adverse health effects could be pretty dreadful. Same with this guy. You know, this is the guy who invented the email. Multiple degrees in this field. He's an expert in this field. And he's saying, well, no. Hang on a second. But of course, he's not going to be on CNN or NBC tomorrow. Or C-SPAN. And you need to understand that. And one of the great benefits of getting a guy like him to come on is that when your friends, your mates tell you, you're talking through your arse, well, you can say, well, don't ignore this guy. You can ignore me. I say that to my friends. Listen, I'm a big baldy gammon. I'm well aware of it. I don't know very much outside of my own field. I'm a journalist and a radio producer and presenter, and I'm brilliant at it. But that's all I know. Joking about the brilliant. That's all I know. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about medicine, biology, physiology, immunology. I know nothing about it. But I know that we live in a world where you're getting one voice and one voice only, while equally qualified men and women are ignored. And that is, I believe that to be criminal. I had a bit of a mini rant, a bit of a meltdown yesterday on Sunday View, because it drives me mad. I had the great privilege of working for some great people. You know what those great people would always say? What's the other side, Richie? All the time. Wasn't it wonderful back then? What's the other side, Rich? That's the way it would have been back then. If the lockdown had happened in 1997, at least in the radio station I worked in, my presenter would have said to me, the producer, Richie, what's the other side of this lockdown? What do you mean, Billy? Well, they keep telling us we have to have the lockdown. There must be people out there who disagree with that. Let's get them on. But not today. It's gone from the sublime to the ridiculous now. BBC Radio 4 Today programme. Imagine it. Go back to the monologue. Let's get our Europe editor, Katja Adler. Let's get her to read a poem. On a poem. A poem. A poem. A poem. Let's get her to read a stanza with her daughter on a flagship news programme. The driest, most black and white, most serious news programme there's ever been. Let's call it the new Hope and Comfort segment. I mean, at what point do you say to yourself, what the fuck is going on? What are they doing to us? Who's doing it? And why? He's right, that guy. I shouldn't agree with him so definitively. I know that, but things have changed. Of course he's right. There is some virus. Of course there is. There is. Listen, and I'm not forgetting what I heard over the weekend from Dr. Cameron Coyle Seidel, or Seidel, or Seidel, I think he calls himself, Cameron Coyle Seidel, the ER critical care doctor, who says that they're treating the wrong thing, that the lung problems he's seen in people are something he's never seen before. They are more like altitude sickness. Look, I'm not forgetting that, but I do think alongside that, whatever that is, I do believe you've got a virus and it's a bit shitty. And what they've done is they've either released that virus themselves or known that it was coming and they've capitalised on it. They've turned the world upside down, introducing the notion of lockdown to people, compulsory lockdown. I mean, who, Jesus, can you imagine your grandparents? Your grandparents fought the Nazis. Can you imagine if you said to them, can you imagine Harry Patch, God love him, he was one of the last men who survived the trenches in Flanders. Imagine if you said to Harry Patch when he was alive, hey, Harry, in the future, there'll be germs outside and you'll all be told to fucking stay inside. He'd have laughed himself sick. And that's where we are. You know? 26 minutes it is past the hour. That's where we are. I'm going to take my leave of you today. It's a 90-minute show today. Shut up. You'll have it and you'll like it. I don't know when I'll be back on Twitter. I have no idea. There's an appeal in. I'm not deleting the tweet they asked me to delete because that tweet was my opinion. That was my opinion. It was my opinion that this is a hoax. Not the virus itself, but the response to it is a hoax. The necessity to lock people down is a hoax. No need for it. What we should have done was said to people, because you must take care of the old. And this is the inversion, you see, because the establishment not only wants to kill off the old, but it wants to blame the old for everything that's wrong with younger people. There's been an all-out assault on our retired elderly for the last few years. They want to kill them off. Nobody wants to kill them. We don't want to kill them off. There's a virus. Bit nasty. Grandad, you're in your 90s now. Behave yourself. Start taking some vitamin C and vitamin D, Grandad, and stay indoors and keep warm. We'll keep an eye out for you. That's how it should have been. And Richie, you've got asthma, but you're fit, so just keep an eye on it, Richie. Yeah, of course, I'll keep an eye on it. I'll take vitamin C and vitamin D too. But lock people down, arrest people, threaten people. What's going on? So that's it then. I'm going to go. And what I'll do is I'll break the programme up. So I'm going to put the interview with Shiva, Dr. Shiva Ayadure. I'm going to put that on YouTube on its own. So if you want to share it around, it'll be on YouTube on its own. I'll separate it out from the monologue. The whole programme will be repeating and it'll be on iTunes and Podomatic and all the rest of it. That's it for Monday's programme then. I'll be back with you tomorrow for a two-hour show. Tuesday at 5 o'clock UK time. I might just sit outside for a bit in the sunshine of the evening because it's absolutely glorious. Going out with what? What have I got? Have I got a tune lined up? I thought I had a tune lined up. I mightn't. Before I go, by the way, hi to Phil Restino in Florida. Top man. Helps me out with information and with ideas. Phil, how you doing, Phil? And I also want to say hi to Spiro Skouras, who might be listening, who might not be listening. Terrific reporter who's been on the programme. And you should check out Activist Post, by the way. Activistpost.com. Michael and the gang there doing a great job. Spiro Skouras making some brilliant videos on the Kissinger, on the Bill Gates aspect of all this, of the vaccines, of the depopulation, all of that. So check out Spiro. If I was on Twitter now, I would tweet a link out to Spiro's latest video. We'll finish with Sam Cooke. Why not? Enjoy the rest of your Monday. I've been Richie Allen. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love